Let me begin with a little story. A few months ago, I was in Toronto, and I was fellowshipping together with our four co-workers in our Toronto church, and we were talking about the goodness of God. Nothing to do with discussing this camp's theme. We were just talking about how God has been good to us in various ways. And one couple of the co-workers in Toronto were sharing how recently, because of the heavy workload, they were very tired. And so they decided to go for a trip to a place north of Toronto, 2 or 3 hours drive away, to get some rest there. And so they went there, and when they got there, as often is the problem on a holiday, is what do you do in a holiday? So they thought they would try something they hadn't tried before. What about horse riding? Now, they'd never been on horseback riding before, so they said, well, why not give it a try? Somebody recommended that particular type of exercise. So they had an address, and they went to look for this horse riding school. So at this time, this is a husband and wife team, and so the husband said to the wife, why don't you drive, you see? So wife will give her more experience in country driving, because in the city, unless you can drive reasonably well in the country, you best not try driving in the city. It's a bit more dangerous. Toronto drivers are really something. Some of us who have been driving for years and years are quite terrified by the way these Toronto drivers drive. You know, they seem to think that they are on the Monte Carlo racetrack or something. I normally drive at a fairly high speed, but nothing compared with the likes of them. I just see the car just goes back. I'm looking at my speedometer. Is there something wrong with my speedometer? So this brother wanted his wife to do a little bit more driving the country road. So they were looking for this driving school, and they asked somebody local, how do we get to this driving school? They said, well, go along this road, and the distance about 10 kilometers. So when you get to 10 kilometer mark, that's about where the riding school is. Ah, no problem. So they look at their speedo and they said, we count up when the meter goes up 10 kilometers, you know that you're near the riding school. So the sister was driving the car and the husband was sitting beside her, and the sister had to keep looking at the road, trying to count 10 kilometers, looking at the road up there. So he said, no, you keep your eye on the road. I look at the kilometers. So lean over to see whether we are there yet. So when it came to the 10-kilometer mark, the husband said, there's a road to the right. He said, you turn into the right-hand side. There's a road there, and that's where the riding school is. The 10-kilometer mark, he said, there is the road. Turn right. But she is not very experienced in driving, and she couldn't stop in time, you see. So zoom, she went past. I missed it. But the country road is very narrow, and her driving skills was a bit limited, so she couldn't turn the car around, because it's 3-point or 5-point turn, you can't manage it. So keep going straight. So the husband said, okay, go to the next right turn, then you turn around and come back again. So driving on, and the husband said, hey, there's a road on the right, and she went zoom, right past that again. So the husband said to her, how much notice do I have to give you, you know? By the time you see the road, she already couldn't stop, you see. So the second one was missed. So what to do? Say, all right, drive on. When we come to the next right turn, then you turn in and turn around and come back onto this road. Okay. So she's going on driving, and you can guess what happened. So the husband said, there is the right-hand road, it's coming up now, slow down, and she went past it again. He said, where are we going? We're going to end up in the Arctic Circle with the red going at this rate. By now, of course, you notice I didn't mention who is the teammate who did the driving. So missed three roads already. By this time, it's long past the 10-kilometer mark, you see. So they're wondering whether they're ever going to get to this writing school. So, all right, this is it. The next one, I'll go very carefully. So she's driving slower, much slower now, because it takes her a long time to slow down and to brake, you see. So this time she's going slower, and then finally they see the fourth one on the right. There it is. Ah, she's okay. And now speed is can manage to slow down, and she turns into this fourth junction, into this fourth right-hand turn. Oh, what a relief. Actually managed to get into this turning. And then they opened their eyes and they took a look in front, and what did they see? They see a signboard there says riding school. It took four mistakes to get to the riding school. In other words, if she had followed the instruction and turned off the first time, they would never have found the riding school. Not even at the second, not even at the third. She had to miss three in order to get to the riding school. So they sat there and thought, how come this is the case? And then they realized that the instruction given to them was wrong. The person should have said 10 miles, not 10 kilometers. Because by now it was actually 16 kilometers. And you know that 10 miles is 16 kilometers. She had gone so far ahead, beyond the point that was stated. And why we were laughing about it was simply this. We remembered the words in Romans, Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 8 and verse 28, where Paul says that God works together all things for good. To whom? To those who love him and are the called according to his purpose. He worked it all for good. The mistake of the person who gave the information as to where the driving school is, how far it was an error. The error, the mistakes of the sister who was driving, multiple error and came out with the right result. That's really amazing, isn't it? God works out all things for good. You see, had they stopped at the first one, they would have been confused because it's a very deserted road. There's hardly anyone to ask where there's a driving school. They wouldn't have been able to find the driving school. It took all these mistakes for them to find the driving school. Do you call that a coincidence, maybe? Yes, if it happens once, you can call that a coincidence. If it happens twice, the statistical probability of coincidence falls dramatically. By the time it keeps on happening, then it's no longer coincidence. So Paul says, God works all things, notice the word, for good. To those, to whom? To everyone? Not necessarily. To those who love him. So those of us who by the grace of God have been drawn into loving him can say we have experienced the goodness of God. Now if I went on to give you illustration after illustration of this kind, I could go on for a long, long time. That we have tasted and experience the goodness of God. But it very much depends on many factors. Just now I mentioned, for example, how you experience life, how you experience God, depends even on your physical condition. If you have a terrible headache, you may be living in the most beautiful environment, but you can't enjoy any of it. Is the environment good? Yes, it is good. But do you taste it as good? The answer is no. You don't taste it. You don't experience it as good. Why? Because the environment is no good? No, it's because you are no good. Your physical condition is no good. Now that is very important for us to understand in our relationship to God. The other day, Brother Caleb introduced himself. In the end, we got a little confused because he said he was known as Khalid, he was known as Yao, he was known as gay or not gay. And he was known as Hyung, you see, and I hope Hyung means fragrant, you see. So, in the end, we're not quite sure which of all these names to call him, you see. Now, God too has many names. The Bible lists God as having very, very many names. And each one of these names means something to the person who uses that name. Jesus, the name high over all, the name sweeter than all other names. There are some names that mean something to you, some names that mean nothing to you. Why does one name mean something and the other mean nothing? It's because you have an experience of that name. That name evokes a certain experience. For example, that name evokes the experience of sweetness. Like the name of your boyfriend or your girlfriend. Mm. Oh. You see, now his name may just be John, and there may be 10,000 Johns in the world, you know. But this John is special. Mm, the sweetness of the name. Mm. So when I say John, John is John. But when I say John to you, your eyes light up, and I thought, what happened? What did I say? In the same way, when Wesley wrote this song, he says, Jesus, the name, high over all, and your eyes are behind me. You see, the name means something to John Wesley this time. It means something to him. But what does the name mean to you? Maybe not very much. Because Wesley experienced Jesus in a way that made that name sweet. It put content into that name. Take this name, Eric Chang. Who is he? Oh, you say, oh, I think I saw this guy walking around the other day there. Snobbish fellow, you know, the nose high in the air. He thinks himself to be something. Yeah. So I thought I might talk to him, but because his nose was so high up in the air, I thought maybe I forget it, leave it to another time. Or another person may think, oh, this guy, Eric Chang, he's not so bad, you know. He's not so bad. He's got his faults, but once in a while, he has quite a nice smile. But another person will say, oh, this fellow, you know, hard man. Looks so severe. Tough, fierce-looking guy. Every time I look at him, gives me nightmares. So you see, the same person, but different people looking at that same person have totally different perception of that person. Isn't it remarkable? So when we say taste and see or experience the character of God, I'm sure that all of you have a different perception of God in the same way as you would have a different perception of me. But why do you have a different perception of me? Well, it depends. You see, if I happen to be sitting next to you at lunchtime, and by mistake I poured my curry sauce on your trousers, you have a certain perception of me that is quite different. See, this guy is exceedingly clumsy. He doesn't even know how to eat curry properly. He can't find his way to his mouth. And he goes and pours it all on my nice trousers. So that is that one act, that one mistake, you can say, or one act of clumsiness determines completely your perception of me. On the other hand, if you were very hungry, and I found that I was not that hungry and I could spare one piece of chicken claw, and I passed it into your plate, and you thought, ah, he is such a lovely man. Oh, he is so generous. He even gave me the chicken claw he didn't want to eat. So you have a totally different perception of me. These kinds of things, it's quite remarkable how one incident determines one's perception of a person. It's quite remarkable. I was listening to a report about the Long March in China. And you know the Long March that the communists made, what in Chinese is called the 25,000 里长征, the 25,000 Li March. I think 25,000 Li is something in the region of what, 4,000 miles, 3 or 4,000 miles. It's a very long march. And some veterans of that march were being interviewed. There are still some old men alive who made that long march. And one of them was asked about his impression of Mao Zedong. Oh, he said, Mao Zedong, a wonderful man. Why? Well, he said, you see, we were all in that long march. Everyone was exceedingly hungry. very hard to find anything to eat. We're all starving at various times. And one day, Mao Zedong happened to come by and sat down next to me, and he was just an ordinary soldier. Looked at his tin plate, saw that he had not much there to eat, and Mao Zedong took three little bao, you see, and put it on his tin plate and said, "Eat it." And so he, being very hungry, very gratefully gobbled down the small bao, you see. And then Mao Zedong walked away. And then somebody said to him, how can you go and eat up Mao Zedong's three bao, you know? Well, you see, he gave it to me. He must have more bao, you know. He is the number one. He has lots of bao. He said, no, Mao Zedong has the same rations as all of us. You ate up his bao, that means he doesn't have any to eat. Oh. He said, well, now I realize what a wonderful man he is. Now, his perception of Mao Zedong was based on only one incident, that he ate three of his bao, you see. It's amazing how one incident, you see, makes such a deep impression on a person's mind. But of course, for those people, the San Fan Wu Fan, I don't know how even to translate this, the anti-revolutionary and counter-revolutionary measures which were taken after the liberation when the communists took over China. You know that thousands were purged, thousands were shot, thousands, but tens of thousands were imprisoned and sent to hard labor camps. Now you can see that those tens of thousands of people who never tasted the three bao of Mao Zedong would have a totally different impression of who Mao Zedong is. This man is evil. This man is vicious. Now you see, what am I trying to say? Now we can see the importance of the word taste. It is not a theoretical thing. We do not determine whether Mao Zedong was good or bad simply by having read some pieces. What we read affects us, but what we experience affects us even more deeply. Now the Bible tells us something very important. We have been talking in this camp about God as good. But many people do not experience God as good. Let's be very straightforward about this. Maybe you are one of those people who have either not experienced God at all, or if you have anything to experience, it wasn't good. And the Bible tells us that you are right. The Bible doesn't say that everyone tastes and sees that God is good. In fact, those who have experienced God as good in this world are relatively few. Very relatively few. If there were more people who experienced God as good, we would easily see that there would be many more people who would be in love with God. To them, the name of God would be very sweet. But how many people do you know who think God is good? Not very many, I'm sure. Not even among the religious people. And I mean religious people includes Christians, Protestants, Catholics. If you want to push it wider, you can include the Muslims, the Buddhists, whoever. The Buddhists don't believe in God at all. But whatever it is, the majority of people either do not know God at all, they're not even sure that he is around, that he exists. Maybe the world just fumbles on its way through the universe, coming from nowhere and going nowhere. Or if they have any perception of God at all, it is negative. And this problem we must deal with if we are going to do any justice to our subject today. We cannot just go around propagandizing God as though he is always experienced as good, or he isn't. And the Bible tells us this, and this is very important for me to pass on to you. Let me read to you a passage from the book of 2 Samuel. In fact, it's also repeated in Psalms. Maybe I'll just read it from the Psalms, Psalm chapter 18 and verse 26, because our time is very, very short, and very soon we have to close. But Psalm 18 and verse 26. And this is what we read here. We'll read at verse 25. With the kind thou dost show thyself kind. With the blameless, you show yourself blameless. With the pure, you show yourself pure. And now notice this. And with the crooked, you show yourself to be crooked. Surprising? In other words, God shows himself to be kind to who? To those who are kind. He shows himself blameless to those who are blameless. But to the evil, he shows himself to be evil. Now, let me qualify this statement about evil. Evil is used in the Bible in two senses. In a moral sense and in a non-moral sense. You know, in the history of religions, there was a religion, a very powerful religion, which has died out for the most part now, a religion called Gnosticism, which dominated the world, the whole Western world, in the early part of the first millennium after Christ. That is, from about the first century AD, from when the church was established, in the first century after Christ, and it continued to thrive to sometime in the 6th or 7th century. A very powerful religion. And you know what they taught about their God? They said that the God who created this world is bad. That God is evil. And one must look for another God who is a good God, but has nothing to do with this creation. The God who made this creation was evil. Because for them, matter is evil. You know that in Greek philosophy, matter is evil. The body is evil because it is matter. All material things are bad. The body is bad because the body captures the spirit of man, holding the spirit of man as in a prison. Your spirit, according to this teaching, Gnosticism, is locked up in your body. Your spirit is imprisoned in your body. And you must be released from your body in order to be saved. How are you saved? You are saved through gnosis. What is gnosis? Gnosis is the Greek word for knowledge. That's why you have the name Gnosticism. It is the doctrine of salvation by a secret knowledge.